Doug Stanhope, and if you're listening to this podcast, don't take my word for it. I got tricked into this in a merch booth.
It's the Homemade Broadcast.
The what podcast?
The Homemade Broadcast.
Homemade?
Homemade Broadcast.
The Homemade Podcast.
Yes, sir.
This is very homemade right here. This shit right here got homemade.
Personnel, this is CBTS. Base vehicle free count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, episode 88. My name is Will Koontz. I'm your host of this program. It airs on Radio St. Pete and RadioSt.Pete.com, where you may be listening right now. And if you are, thank you very much. Don't change the station. I know it's hard, but just do the right thing. Think it over. And you'll see that your place is right here with me. How about those Tampa Bay Lightning, huh? My goodness. That Game 6 felt like a Game 7. But they somehow managed to pull it out, and we're going to the Eastern Conference Finals. Thankfully, because there has not been very much happening in Tampa Bay sports for a long time. Long time. I think we're due for this. And I don't... Here's the thing about hockey. I'm going to be honest with you. I watched maybe three games, and I went to maybe two games the whole regular season. And then once the playoffs come, you won't see a bigger Bolts fan than yours truly right here. But, so I don't know. But I'm excited. I mean, I'm certainly, playoff hockey is very exciting. And I'm glad to see the Bolts doing well. Team is stacked, apparently, from what I've read on websites and stuff like that. Now that I'm a super fan, the team's really deep. It's stacked. They're going to be good for a long time. So who knows? Maybe we'll have a winning franchise here. Let's get a dynasty going. I'd love to see a dynasty in Tampa Bay. I mean, I guess the Bucks were the closest thing to that back in the day, and they got that one Super Bowl, and that was about it. Then everyone retired and hightailed it out of Tampa, and then it's been a dark black hole in Tampa Bay sports for a long time ever since. But, you know, who knows? We got this Jameis character coming in at quarterback. Looks like he's probably going to be our starting quarterback day one. I'm rooting for him. I think you're silly if you're one of these people who don't like him and you're not rooting for him to succeed. Because if you're a Buccaneer fan, you should be ready to root for your quarterback. So, yeah, I'm happy with the pick. I think he's been exceeding expectations so far. I don't know what kind of expectations they even have for him being a rookie quarterback at this point. But, you know, I think they're expecting big things out of him, of course. Number one pick, number one overall. I guess you got to start him year one. I like Glennon. I was kind of, you know, rooting for Glennon, but I think Jameis is going to be the guy, and I'm looking forward to this season. It's exciting when you have that franchise, you know, maybe not a franchise player, but a guy that you draft to be your franchise player for a long time. And him being, I think he's from Alabama, but he played at Florida State, of course, and there's a lot of Florida State fans here in Tampa Bay, so... You know, I'm rooting for him. I got high hopes for the young man. I hope he can. I saw some lawyer said something about that he thought that Jameis was not fit to play in the NFL, but this guy is a lawyer, so I don't know what kind of knowledge that this fella has. Probably the same amount that I do, which of course is none. So yeah. Anyways. Go Lightning. Rays are doing okay. That's been your Tampa Bay sports update, I guess. Sorry about that. I don't know why I even did that. Anyways, this is the Homemade Broadcast, episode 88, and it is brought to you by Sly Bar. Check out why I Love the Berg is named Sly Bar one of the top 15 businesses to watch in 2015. They got great craft beer, great staff, lovely people all around. They're located at 2061 Central Avenue, right here in St. Petersburg. Check them out on Facebook, facebook.com/SlyBarSt. And our newest sponsor Angelo's Bar and Grill. They provide all our pizzas at the open mics. And the last open mic on Tuesday, everyone was loving the pizza, man. They were telling me how good it was. I didn't even get a piece, which is kind of a boner because I was a little hungry. But didn't manage to get a slice. Everyone munched it down. So thanks a lot, everyone. But I'm glad you enjoyed it, and it is there for you. So check out Angelo's at www.saintpizza.com, which, again, just the greatest website ever. That's just the best name ever. And you can find them on Facebook at facebook.com/saintpizza, of course. STPETEZA, saintpizza.com. And then also I want to tell you about this trunk sale that's happening for benefit of the Haitian Mission Parlefoy. Excuse me, I'm a terrible reader. Proceeds are benefiting them. It's Saturday, June 13th, 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. It's at the First Unity Church, 460 46th Avenue in North St. Petersburg. So I guess what the deal is the church is donating their space. So you pay $30 is a suggested donation, and you come and bring your junk that you don't want, that you might were thinking about putting in a yard sale, and you have this combined yard sale with everybody else. So everyone gets a spot, you put out your stuff, and you keep the, I guess you keep the money that you make at your sale. And then the money that is the $30 donation goes to the Haitian Mission, the Parlefoy. So that's a worthy event because that place is still a mess. The world's just a mess in general. So if you can get out there, I guess there will be a 50-50 raffle as well. For more information, contact Sumi Fink at 727-331-0104. All right. Good. So, HMB 88, we got Creative Loafing's Scott Harrell coming in to talk. I met Scott. I actually haven't met Scott yet, but I wrote to Scott after he came out with this really great article that I saw on Creative Loafing. It was, we'll talk about it, but basically the Hollander is just built this really beautiful pool. And he was kind of, he sees it, I guess, as a, what's the word? Just where things are going. St. Pete's becoming more ritzy, more, you know, higher class, I guess. Maybe even you could say yuppie-ish. I don't know. And it was built by his point being that this city, the greatness that has come over the past, you know, decade or so has been from the artisans and the artists here. And now it's getting to be so expensive that eventually a lot of these people that built this city and painted on its walls and did all these cool things are now going to have to find a new residence, a new city to do it in. So we'll get to talking to him about that. I'm sure we'll talk about comedy and all that, but I'm talking about him like he's not here. So as we wait for Scott to arrive, through the magic of radio, of course, please hold, and we'll be back with Creative Loafing's Scott Harrell. All right, Scott Harrell, sitting next to me. How are you, my friend?
Very well. Thanks for having me.
Doing a little chatting off air, laying the rules down. There's no potty mouthing or anything like that. You know, we're all adults here, but, you know, the dang FCC, you gotta keep it under wraps, I guess.
It's a pretty difficult thing. I'll try my best.
You know, it's gotten so much easier for me now. Like, I know if there's a microphone in front of my face, just don't do it. I thought it was going to be impossible because in my day-to-day life, cursing is important to me.
Yes.
Like, I pride myself on the words I can come up with and the words I can combine. But once I get a microphone in front of my face, it's automatically shut off. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard sometimes. Sometimes things slip out. But, you know, it's gotten much better. So Scott is a writer. He's, I guess, most well known for writing for Creative Loafing here in Tampa Bay, who I've had my own run-ins with on social media, and yeah, and fighting with them. So it's good to have a representative from them come in and talk to me today.
That's what social media is for.
It is.
It's for beefing.
That is all I use it for. Essentially, I tweet out links to these podcasts and then just fight with people.
Yeah, try to get Denny's to retweet you.
Yes, bring back the Grand Slam, Denny's. I don't think they let it go, but I'm going to start that rumor that they did.
They're taking away the Grand Slam.
It's gone, and I'm gonna start a social justice warrior campaign to bring back the Grand Slam, even though it never left, and the McRib too.
I love the McRib. I'm just sitting here thinking about them.
The next I know McRib I kind of zoned out too. When is the last? I can't even remember. I don't even know if I've had a McRib. Honestly, I can't remember ever eating one in my life.
I think there's a countdown website that counts down to the next time the McRib comes back, because they have to grow more of that stuff in the vat,
and right.
it takes time. It's very time consuming.
Yeah, they just throw, I don't know, it's just garbage.
It's like those
compost.
Little dinosaur sponges that you put in the bathtub and they
swell. Oh my gosh, yes.
Then you get a giant fake slab of ribs.
Right. I love those
delicious.
Things. Do they make those? I wonder if they still make those dinosaurs anymore.
I don't know, but I will tell you, I was at Lowry Park a couple weeks ago for the Chinese lantern thing they're doing now, and they have those machines where they do the hot pressed molded plastic toys that I haven't seen since I was 5 years old.
Right.
And we were just shoving dollars into that stupid thing.
Where you get the alligators and the stuff.
We went to every one. We got the alligator, the monkey, the rhinoceros, the penguin, I think, was the fourth one.
I was at Dinosaur World, and they had one of those too. And my friend was like, "Oh, I'm going to get one of these." I'm like, "All right." I remember the smell. It brought back the nostalgia of the whole event. And I remember really enjoying it as a child, like getting these things.
Inhaling the toxic fumes.
Yes.
Getting a little child buzz.
Yeah. Then when it come out, it would just scald your hands immediately.
Don't touch it.
Yeah. That was part of the experience, though. And then, you know, the process happened. I was watching it, and then it was over, and I was like, Well, that spoiled me on this whole thing. I wish I wouldn't have seen that.
You just leave it in the car when you get home.
Yeah,
you're done.
Yeah, it would just melt all over your hood of your car. Yeah, definitely. Scott, you wrote. I originally contacted you because you wrote a piece in Creative Loafing a couple weeks ago that was about the Hollander pool being put in down in St. Pete, and I think you kind of used it as a, I don't know if this is the right word, but a metaphor for. Just what's happening in the city in general.
Yeah, it was kind of, I found it kind of emblematic about the way the city is sort of changing, I think. It wasn't specifically about the Hollander, but the Hollander, just after hearing about, you know, one, that condo, it's going to be the tallest condo in Tampa Bay, it's going up down on the waterfront.
That's the one, is that the one?
The one.
Yeah.
The
one.
But that, and there was the noise ordinance. And it was those three things sort of came together to make me think about how St. Pete's changing and what it's going to mean for, you know, the more bohemian people and even the more affluent people that are coming in. I mean, it's sort of in flux.
Yeah, it's definitely getting more. I feel like it's cliche saying like yuppie-fied or something, but
the cliches are cliche for a reason.
Right. But yeah, like even I just moved into this place where I'm at now. I was catty corner at this Dumperoo building around the corner, but it was very affordable for me there. And then they said, "Oh, I can make more money if I kick you out and put somebody else in." So I was like, "Oh man, I really love the old Northeast neighborhood." Mm-hmm. So it was important for me to stay here. And I got lucky with this place that I can barely afford.
Yeah.
But it's just keeps going, you know, rent's going up through the roof. And the point that you made was that the artists kind of made this into what it was. There's a bunch of great places to eat here. There's, you know, art all over the walls. You know, people have done these murals, and it's a beautiful place to live now. And there's lots to do. And now the people that created it can't afford to do it anymore.
Unfortunately, it seems, you know, that's just the same old story. When I first moved to Tampa Bay, I lived in Hyde Park. Over in Tampa in a $350 a month one-bedroom apartment that now is probably $1,400 a month to live in,
right.
You know. But St. Pete seems like the sort of place where it's possible that the people can, you know, if they set their minds to it, they may be able to hold on to part of that, you know, keep some places affordable, keep the green space, keep the arts and the culture and maybe find a coexistence, because the people here are really sort of proactive. I mean, that's why all the murals happen. That's why St. Pete Shuffle happened, the Tweed Ride, all that stuff happened because people just did it.
Yeah.
And I think that there may be a way to maybe not have another cliche, gentrify the, you know, the lower income creatives out of the area.
Well, I'm curious because they're building all of these, you know, 4th Street. Now there's just these, all these high rises going up. Where are they planning on putting... I mean, who's going to live there? Who's going to be able to afford to live in these places?
That cracks me up because there are already apartments over by USF St. Pete that are really beautiful and really expensive and really empty.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to add more empty apartments? Who knows? Maybe the Coke cartels from Miami will come up and fill them up. I don't know.
It would be the new hub here. Bring some new capital in. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, for real though, like what are they... I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking. It just seems like an awful lot of space that is going to go unused. Then I'm thinking, well, maybe they'll just have to rent them out, and then maybe I can get a sweet new pad, in one of these high rises, just because out of desperation they'll have to do it.
Or we'll start a new generation of squatters that only squat in like really nice, pastel condos.
Yeah, that's what's up. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Where do you see? I mean, because you've been here a long time. You're from Tampa originally.
I was a military brat. My dad was in the Air Force.
Okay.
I came here to go to school in 1990, so I've been here 25 years now.
All right. And how have you noticed? Because Tampa, even Tampa too, for that matter, Tampa Bay area in general seems to be an up and coming area.
Yeah, downtown especially. Yeah.
Right. So how have you noticed? What changes? What big changes have you noticed during that time?
I think the biggest thing is just the character of the town, especially St. Pete, went from being God's waiting room. I mean, when I first started coming down here, I knew when I started partying down here. I came down here because I started dating a girl that lived in St. Pete, and we knew all the people in town because we partied with the 30 people in their 20s that actually lived there.
Right.
And now, you know, everywhere you go, you see new faces, you meet new people. I just think that the median age of the city has just dropped precipitously. And that's why these people came in and got the cheap rents and opened their little stores and went, you know, it would be great if I could paint the outside of the building. And they called the landlord, and the landlord was like, if you want to pay for it, I don't care.
Yeah.
But it was just mainly that younger generation brought in that creative energy. And I'm like, at this point, I'm even talking about the generation beneath me, people that are in their 20s. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's been really wonderful to see. There's so much more to do. When I first came down here, there were like two bars to go to, you know, that were quote unquote catered to younger nightlife people.
Right.
And now there's just, I mean, there's too much to do, it seems like.
Yeah, there is. I try to find places to eat now, and I'm like, there's so many choices that my brain can't handle choices, and I shut down, and I'm like, I'll just go to Chipotle because I don't know what to do. And then I kick myself afterwards. I'm like, oh, yeah, there's this new place.
I forgot about this place.
Yeah, yeah. I do that all the time. Creative Loafing Scott Harrell is sitting down with me. So what do you attribute it, the younger people that gathered here? Because I've been thinking about it, and the only thing that really comes to my mind is the USF campus that was placed downtown.
I think that's a huge part of it. I think part of it is relatives of the older retirees that lived here came here, were forced to come here when they were, you know, when they were kids and in their teens. They came here for the summer. We got to go to grandma's neighborhood. There's nothing to do there. But something about it, I remember when we used to go to St. Petersburg. That was beautiful. You know, there's so many parks.
Yeah.
And I think that had to do with it. But the USF St. Pete campus was definitely the major catalyst, I think, for sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, you got all these young people, and then maybe they stayed because rent was cheap. And then they decided, maybe, I've always wanted to open a grilled cheese sandwich shop. And then they
a gourmet, an artisanal grilled cheese sandwich shop.
Yes, of course, right, yeah, excuse me. That's, I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool. The mac and cheese place is going to blow your mind. But I... Also, like when I first started going to school at USF up in Tampa, I didn't like the big classes. I didn't like feeling like I was getting sort of lost in the shuffle. And I think that people that maybe have a little more of a different mindset, an individual mindset, when they go to school and they see how big it is, maybe they go, you know what? The St. Pete campus is smaller. It's closer to where my parents live.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't I just go there instead? And there'll be smaller classes. And some of those people tend to be the more creative, innovative people, just as a matter of statistics, you know, and so they came down here and stuck around.
Yeah, and they did have, I mean, the graphic design program is that USF's program is at the St. Pete campus, and I
think, a lot of writing programs.
Yeah, I'm an English major, English graduate from there. I think they even might have moved to fine art. It used to be in Tampa. Neil Bender taught there.
I think that some of it's, they may be in the process. But there's still some classes up in Tampa in you know, cam and all that stuff is up there.
It makes sense to just move it all down here. I mean, they got the old Dolly building there. I mean, that just seems like that's a place to be.
It's an inspiring place, too. You know, you look out,
right on the water.
You're not listening to your professor. You're looking out the window at the beautiful water in the park. And
yeah, definitely. I miss going to school. Sometimes I graduate in 2011. And sometimes I still, even now, will wake up in the middle of the night in a sweat thinking that I have an assignment.
You missed something.
Yeah. I don't think it will ever go away.
Nope. In my job, I wake up thinking I missed a deadline, or there's a deadline in the morning that I suddenly am remembering, and the paper went to press yesterday. Don't freak out.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's kind of why, my job now is very laid back. Like, I work at a place that I can take my laundry to work and do that with me. So, but yeah, it's weird, man, every once in a while. And then I sometimes I'm like, maybe I'll go to grad school. Maybe I'll do that. And then I get my student loan bill in the mail, and I'm like, I think I'll just pass.
You should become one of those conscientious objectors that seem to be, there's a lot of graduates now who are flat out refusing to pay their student loans because they're so usurious.
I feel like a bum, honestly, getting these things, because I can't, and I know I don't feel as bad anymore because I know that it's beyond my control. I can't pay this.
No, it's crazy. I mean, our parents hammered into us the guilt of debt. Mm-hmm. Never have debt. You know, to borrow money or to put something on a credit card is terrible. It's shameful. But they lived with an economy that we never experienced. Yeah, I mean, debt is just a part of our lives.
The 80s and 90s were like the milk and honey era, man. Everybody was doing okay, it seemed like. I got a portable handheld TV 1 year for Christmas in like 95 or 96. So
like a Sultan?
I guess. I don't know. It was wild. I mean, we weren't that. I mean, we were very middle class, certainly.
No, there was a middle class then. And middle class meant that you could actually have a few nice things.
Right. So I feel bad about the student loans thing. And I probably will be forced eventually to become a conscientious objector out of necessity.
Out of necessity, right.
I got the stupid bill in the mail today, and I've been deferring. So if I pay the minimum payment, which I believe was $330.
That's the minimum.
That's the minimum. Oof. And by the time I pay it off, I will have paid $93,000 and I owe $40,000. So that just seems like a lot.
That's a little bit ridiculous.
That's a little much. So, yeah, I mean, at this point, I look at that number and just laugh at it because I'm like, I can't worry about this. It's whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just going to chase my dreams and do that instead, you know. I'm not married or anything.
Yeah, so. If that money ever comes up, you'll be the first person I give it to. You know?
Sweet. Thank you, man. I actually tweeted at Floyd Mayweather because, you know, he just got $100 million, and I figured that guy could use some good press. So I thought, man, maybe, you know, I'll get lucky.
A little PR opportunity for
Yeah,
him.
I haven't heard from Floyd yet, but, you know, maybe his people will get back to me at some point. So, Scott, where do you see St. Pete headed? Do you think we're doomed to have this city just be go back to being a bunch of rich old people now instead of just old people? And
I think we may be headed for a period of irritating affluence where people like you and I can't really afford to go out to eat twice a week, but they'll be, you know, the kind of clubs that I don't want to go to anyway.
Yeah.
And I think there may be a brief period of that, but I also think that the city's too funky to just sort of lay down and let that become the new character of the city.
Mm-hmm.
So there may be a little friction, but I honestly see St. Pete, I mean, keeping a definite faction, a definite percentage of, you know, what makes it so great.
Yeah, I wonder too, because everybody's an artist here, and I mean, like a visual artist. I mean, everyone's doing something, but especially there's a concentration of visual artists here in the area. That I saw a video, and it featured Basque, and then I think they interviewed Frank Strunk too. Mm-hmm. And his main beef. Did you see that? You know
yes,
what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a great production.
It was very nicely done. So he said in it that he didn't really feel, Frank said that he didn't really feel like the city was necessarily investing in the local artists, mm-hmm. that they were pulling in. You know, of course there's a Dolly, which I think that's a big contributor to why we have so many artists here. It's one of the best museums in the world.
And the Ringling is right across the Skyway.
Right. But then, you know, I think his beef was with Chihuly. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
And he, you know, I guess he's based in Seattle, and they paid him a bunch of money to come here, I guess.
Yeah, that's basically what happened. They were hoping that there would be a... They put the Chihuly next to the... I forget what the name of the arts program that's there downtown on Central, and hoped that there would be a trickle-down effect, that the tourists that went to the Chihuly, that the money and attention would sort of seep across the street and help out this place that has these great arts programs. And I don't really know if it's happened or not, but it seems to me like a misplaced investment, and it had to have been a large investment, too.
Yeah. I don't think it's I know there are galleries here that are doing well, that, and I think most of them sell art from out of town, the galleries that are doing well. I don't really see anybody buying anything from local artists.
No, and people like Frank and Basque, they sell a lot of their stuff outside of town. They go to shows other places to sell their pieces, and it's a shame. It really is.
I wonder who's buying art down here. For an art town, who are the patrons here? Like, I always, my fantasy is that somebody will see something of mine and be like, I must have this. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm getting, you know, 10 grand a piece or something like that. Just because that's what it is. It's all a big hustle, I think. That if one rich person takes notice in you and starts buying your stuff, and other people take that person's opinion for something that's gospel, boom, you got it made, man. That's all it is.
I think there's definitely that element to it, for sure. But I really couldn't tell you who. I mean, I go down to Shore Drive. Is it Shore Drive? And I go to the Birchwood, you know, and I see a lot of very, very affluent people walking around that I don't know, you know. They're here. Yeah. Those are probably the people that are buying pieces of art here and there. But I will tell you, I was at the Emerald one time, and the drummer for the Goo Goo Dolls, not the Goo Goo Dolls, Better Than Ezra.
Oh, yeah.
Came in, and, you know, they hang art in there, local art there,
right,
sometimes.
Right.
And he bought like $1,000 of the local people's art just That's because
awesome.
He liked it and he wanted to put the money into the local economy.
That's awesome. Yeah. And the thing about that was, is he probably bought every piece in there.
He bought nearly everything that was there.
Yeah, you got to price it for so low. I mean, you got to put, you know, $60 or something. And then I feel like part of that is, I think there's something in marketing, I forget what the term is, but you gotta put a big price tag on something to show its value.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you have to find that line of, okay, that's ridiculous, and it's too low. It's not worth making at that point if you're making $60 on it.
Or people don't see the value in it if you price it too low.
Right. So I think there's a lot of that too, especially with the local folks that, you know, there's some people succeeding. Sebastian's doing well with the murals, obviously. Mm-hmm. Bass is doing okay, it seems like. But there's I know a lot of people struggling to try to make it, and there just isn't. And I don't know what it is about this area too, that it just drew people in. I've heard Sebastian came from Kansas City, and I forget, he came and did this show like a year ago, but I forget why he came here. But I don't know what it is. It seems like St. Pete is a special area.
Well, it's like, yeah, what makes Portland, Oregon,
right?
What makes Asheville, North Carolina? I mean, what originally made those people that sort of built those urban cultures, what made them go there in the first place? Usually it's college.
Mm-hmm.
Here we don't, it's not like it's Gainesville or something. We do have a school, but you can't really attribute all of that to USF St. Pete, I don't think. I mean,
I think USF St. Pete, though, was... I couldn't get into Florida, so I went to USF St.
Yeah,
Pete.
Yeah, absolutely.
So people like me, you know, ended up there, and I feel like maybe those are the people who didn't pay much attention in school or didn't do as well as they could have, you know, if they would have paid a little more attention. And, you know, the artsy kids and stuff like that who end up doing other things. So I guess, I mean, that's the only thing I can think of. And then that was a good point that you brought up, too, about people visiting, you know, Aunt Charlene, Great Aunt Charlene.
Great Aunt Charlene.
Yeah,
God
beautiful
rest her
woman.
Bones.
Made the best casserole that you've ever tasted in your life, I'll tell you.
She had that dish of rock candy.
Ooh, so good. The mint leaves gummy candy. Those things are delicious. I got to figure out where
she
to
you never pick
those.
Up one, though. You pick up the entire
yes.
gummy ball of
that's
the whole
one
thing.
Candy.
That's, is that what counts
thing.
As one?
Absolutely,
excellent.
Absolutely. Scott, so you've been writing for, how long have you been writing for Creative Loafing?
I started as the music critic back in 2000, end of 2001, beginning of 2002. Worked there for about 6 years. Did some other stuff, freelancing, and then I left to go freelance. And by the time I got home from work that day, the freelance market had dropped out because of websites and people wanted to pay very little money.
Right.
So I went into corporate copywriting for a while, and I was still writing for Creative Loafing on the side. I had a column, and a little over a year ago, their managing editor left, Joe Bardi left, and David, the editor, called me up and asked me if I wanted to take the job, and I hated corporate copywriting. Mm. Nothing against the people, nothing against the, you know, there are people who are very skilled at that, and there are people who love it. I was not in the right position, so I jumped at the chance to get back into journalism.
Yeah, right on. So you've been there...
All told, it's been over 10 years.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I was looking through your website, which is lifeaswebblowit.com.
My seldom updated personal
yeah.
website.
But there's a lot of stuff on there. I mean, there's your Creative Loafing stuff, and there's your private stuff. Mm. It's an interesting read. Where did you come up with as far as the obvious concerns, Life as We Blow It? What is the connotation behind... behind that, other than just being like, oh, we're screwing up?
Well, I got sort of known when I began writing more stuff than just music. I sort of became known as the rant guy, and it was like the Lewis Black of the local free weekly newspaper. I was always railing against somebody or something, and the name just sort of seemed to fit, because most of my stuff was carping about something.
Yeah, gotcha.
I've had other, like Life Sentences was one of the columns that I did before then. It's had several different iterations, and Life as We Blow was just the most recent name for what Scott's going to yell about this week or whatever.
Gotcha. So your main title is the online editor?
Managing online editor.
So what does that really, what does that mean? Is that your contributor, and then you...
It means I don't get to write as much as I would like to, because... I have to keep refreshing the website, keep contributors coming in, badger the rest of the editorial team to get stuff in, get the paper out. And on the management side, I have to pay the freelancers and generally do a bunch of management stuff that I'm not very good at.
Mm-hmm.
But it's part of the job. So.
Yeah, you learn too. You know, my thing is I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm going to do it, so I'll figure it out eventually.
Well, it's one of the... paying freelancers always kind of hurts my heart a little bit, because I'd like to give them all $1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I saw a fantastic online article today by our friend Michael Murillo on J.B. Ball. Did you see that today?
I have not read it yet. We're on deadline for our summer guide, but our arts editor, Julie, put that up today, and I'm going to check that out tonight when I get home.
It's a good read, just a short interview with him. J.B.'s a very talented young man. Florida's best comedian. I think that's a competition. He's wins every competition he enters. He wins, and he got to do the show at I got him to do the Creative Loafing Space show that I did a couple weeks ago.
Was he on the Enigma bill a couple of months ago as well?
I believe he was.
I think that I saw him there. Was where I the last time I saw him, and I was really impressed.
Yeah, they have a kind of a rotating staff there that they... I guess Cigar City Comedy has probably like, I guess, 10, 12 comics that they can mix in and out, which it worried me a little bit, because I guess their last show at Enigma was not well attended.
Really?
The first few were packed.
It was jammed the last time that I was there.
Yeah. And it's hard. I mean, comedy is a different breed. And that's another thing I wrote to you about, was I was griping about the comedy coverage here. And you seem like you might be a guy to talk to about that. So I addressed you, and you were kind enough to answer me back, and answered a lot of my questions right away. And then I kind of felt like a jerk after I got the reply back from you.
That's what the paper's for. Unfortunately, you know, with the media's in transition right now, and the physical book only has so many pages in it, and we have to figure out what the greatest amount of people at any given time want to know about. We always have comedy in our event listings, but I would love to devote more space to it, and we're actually talking about trying to find a space in the schedule for a comedy issue.
That would be fantastic. I think that would be very beneficial. I think the thing with people is that I've noticed is the majority of folks don't search out things for themselves.
No, I would agree with that.
So you got to have it put in their face. And I think that probably when Law Smith addressed Creative Loafing last year, the end of last year,
across the bow CL Comedy Wars.
Right, right. I feel like, you know, maybe Creative Loafing should be flattered, because I feel that Creative Loafing is kind of the cultural epicenter of local media here.
Well, thank you.
So I mean, like, you know, while we were bad at everybody, but but basically Creative Loafing got the brunt of it, because
you think that it should be something that says Creative Loafing, that they go together naturally, and I agree 100%.
Yeah. And like I said, so we were Law, I think, of course, it was kind of to get attention and get Creative Loafing's attention. Sure. And it did exactly what it intended to, but there was real speaking from, you know, I put on the shows at Sly Bar and do showcases around the area. There's real frustration there, because there are so many talented people. You got Matt Fernandez here, just opened for Bill Burr a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite comedians in general. I watch a lot of comedy. He's one of my favorites. And I just feel like if they just got a little push and more people knew about them, that this could... I think Orlando and Miami are kind of the comedy towns in Florida, but I think that could swing really quick.
I do, too. I personally don't know a lot about... the Orlando comedy scene, but I would be hard pressed to think that it's as good as the comedy scene here.
I think over there they have more clubs. They have smaller clubs too.
Well, they have the quote unquote comedy clubs.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they're for, and because they're a tourist town, they're going to get that walk up traffic to those places like that. But I would rather see a comedy show at a punk bar than see one at a comedy club. No offense to any comedy clubs. That's just my personal. Druthers, you know, I like Side Splitters and I like the Improv. I haven't ever been to Coconuts.
Coconuts is weird. it's very nice inside. It's small. I like small intimate settings, but they charge comics to go on stage there to do the open mic.
Really?
Yes.
That's not cool.
It's very counterproductive to building a community, a culture there. And especially because what
it's
are you
like
going
to get? It's like paying the strippers to dance, man. That's not cool.
Yeah.
You're making the strippers pay to dance. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah, so it's five. I think they charge them $5 for 5 minutes. They might even have to buy a drink, too. So, yeah, it's not conducive to creating any sort of communities. And how much money are you possibly making? I get at Sly Bar between 10 and 15, you know, sign-ups at my open mic. So what is, I mean, $60, right. $70? It's not worth it.
Well, they're hoping
that
they think that all comics are drunks, and they're hoping that they're going to spend.
Well, they are. They're absolutely right.
$100 at the bar waiting for their set.
Yeah,
you know,
and a lot of them will, and that's where, you know, Joe at Sly Bar has been very kind with this whole, because I didn't know if it was going to work either, you know, the comedy thing here, and I knew, there was a guy that I knew, Kent, was his name. And he was trying to do comedy here, and he would do shows here and there, and this was probably 6-7 years ago. And that guy disappeared. I don't know what happened to him, but he was like the only guy doing anything. So with the when I started this open mic about a year ago and doing the events, it was kind of to support the podcast and be another, you know, cross-promotional tool.
You're a mogul.
Yeah, totally. Trying to be. So yeah, it was a tool, and then it just kind of picked up. I knew there'd be a market for it just because of this town. It's an artsy town, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And now there was 3 comedy shows in St. Pete last week in one night. There was one at the Amsterdam, There was one at Bula Cafe, and there was one at Moscato's.
Right. Bula's right. Bula is a block from my house, and I keep forgetting that they're doing comedy now.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I think that for long-time scenester people, there may be a little bit of a bad hangover. I don't know if these were Kent shows, but the very first sort of local fringe stand-up show I ever saw was at the Emerald, and it was probably 8 or 9 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago. And the comics were bad. I mean, they were either flat-out bad, or they had some presence, but they were just doing other people's jokes.
Oh,
and,
yeah,
there were bad. One or two people that were just flat out, you know, Bill Hicks verbatim.
Oh,
bits.
No.
And that kind of, like, I mean, personally for me, I was like, oh, I'm not going to go see another comedy show for a while. That was really lame.
Right. And, you know, there's still a lot of bad comics here.
But there's a lot of bad comics everywhere. There's a lot of bad bands everywhere. There's a lot of bad visual artists. There's a lot of bad photographers. It's just, that's the nature of the beast.
Right. So, you know, having the open mics are important. It's because it's not like music where you can play your guitar in your bedroom and eventually get better.
Right, absolutely.
You have to have an audience, you know, to watch. And, like, in every, you talk to any comedian, listen to any podcast, they'll tell you, you should be, if you really want to be a comedian, you should be hitting open mics 4 or 5 times a week.
Mm-hmm. And you should be bombing. You know?
Yeah.
You definitely got to go through that period. I'll tell you, the thing that was interesting to me about Sly was a couple of the comics that I saw the first time that I went to the open mic. Maybe a lot of people don't realize that they're trying new material. They're working different stuff. They're going to say some stuff that's not going to go over. And a couple of the comics that my buddies and I saw that night that we thought were okay, we saw at Enigma 2 weeks later, and they killed.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the stuff that they know is good.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So that, as somebody who is into live music and original stuff, like, I go into Sly Bar knowing that they're going to, you know, this is not the polished,
right,
you know, club set that you're going to see.
That's important to know that, certainly. And I think when I first started doing this, my friends would always come to support me, so at least have them. But even they eventually were kind of like, I can't listen to the same. I can't listen to the same stuff. So there's guys that I know that go and do the same 5 minutes, and they've been doing it for a year now. Mm. And it's like, dude. But there's also people who have a new 5 minutes every time.
Every time. Yep.
And those are the people you pay attention to. And now I'm able to set up bigger shows. You know, we did the Creative Loafing ones. Hopefully there'll be more of those. I did USF. Mm-hmm. So they're coming.
Where did you do the USF show?
It was at St. Pete campus, and it was for their EcoFest.
Was it outside? Or
it was outside.
Okay,
it was,
I got you.
Brutally hot, and yeah. It was finals week. So it was a tough crowd. There was just a dude with his shirt off playing Frisbee by himself. That was pretty much about it. But it was still fun, man. And the comics, you know, they like to, it's what they like to do. So yeah. They didn't mind, you know.
No, it's still practice. Even if there's nobody there, you're still refining your art. So.
And when I say, there was a small, decent crowd. There was attentive and paid attention and everything. So it ended up working out pretty well. But yeah, I mean, I'm seeing the market for it. And I just, like I said, I feel like you just need a little boost in media coverage from in general. And I mean, the Chicago Tribune writes about comedy every week.
Mm-hmm.
I know this isn't Chicago, it's a different
who
thing.
Who do you think you are?
I know.
Who are you
I
comparing
know.
Yourself to?
I'm gonna make a t-shirt that says Chicago, New York, LA, St. Pete. Yes, for comedy, and have like a microphone underneath.
It's the most original idea I've heard all day.
I know. I can't believe no one's thought of it. It's crazy. Well, all right, man, that's it. We're done.
Oh, well, I really appreciate you having me in, and we will try to do more, get some more comedy coverage.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm whenever you want to talk, let me know. We'll talk. I can set you up with people and everything, and, you know, I'm looking forward to it. Scott, give out your social media stuff and all that quickly.
CLTampa.com. On Twitter, it's at CL_Tampa Bay. My personal Twitter handle is Harrell Scott, H-A-R-R-E-L-L Scott, all one word. And my personal website is lifeasweblowit.com.
Very good. Scott Harrell, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
You find me on Twitter, home_made_man, facebook.com/thehomemadebroadcast. Catch the Homemade Broadcast on iTunes. Just search for the Homemade Broadcast. RadioSaintPete.com, Facebook.com/RadioSaintPete. Next week, we got Laura Wesley, who does a one-woman show called The War Virgin. Looking forward to that. Talk to you all next week. See ya.